5th of November saw the election for the second time of Donald J. Trump. And tonight we're going to talk about his impact, we believe, on Bible prophecy. And you can see at the top of the slide, the introductory slide, those words, "The Most High rules in the kingdom of men." That's taken from Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17, where we read that the Most High does rule in the kingdom of men, and he sets up over it whomsoever he will, even the basest of men. And there are some who have said, well, maybe that includes our Lord Jesus Christ, because he was lowly and meek among men. I don't believe so. The context is about the Nebuchadnezzars and the Belshazzars of this world, men who did not have a moral compass. And so, I believe that Donald Trump can be incorporated in that statement. I don't think anybody would regard his character as being a perfect paragon of virtue. And so God is choosing people to fulfill his plan and purpose in the earth. And it seems very likely that he's chosen this man for a special purpose. Romans 13 verse 1, the Apostle Paul makes it very clear that the people who rule our world are not there by chance. They're there because God has put them there. He says, "For there is no power but of God." Did you read that? No power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. In Psalm 17, verses 13 and 14, we read these words, where David says, "Deliver my soul from the lawless one, who is thy sword, from men who are thy hand, O Yahweh, from the men of this age." In other words, God uses men for his purpose, and sometimes he uses them as a weapon against the enemies of Israel or against Israel at times. And so God uses the rulers of this world to fulfill his plan and purpose in the earth. That's why I regard the events of the 5th of November as one of the most significant events in what was really a very dramatic year of fulfilling Bible prophecy. Here he was, elected again as the 47th president of the United States of America. And of course, we know that up until the last week of the campaign, most political pundits and pollsters predicted a win for the Democratic Party nominee for President Kamala Harris. On election day even, most of the liberal media were very confident that Harris would win. She was, of course, annihilated in the Electoral College vote, 312 to 226, to the utter disbelief and consternation of most political commentators. They simply could not believe it. But you see, if Harris had won that election, then nothing much would have changed. She would have continued on the path of Joe Biden and everything would just carry on. It's not going to be that way now, is it? Because as of tomorrow, Donald Trump will be inaugurated. He will sign more executive orders tomorrow than Biden signed in 4 years. He's determined to bring change. And we believe that some of that change impacts Bible prophecy. That's why we're here tonight. It is an amazing triumph because there were very few, except perhaps his own supporters, who thought he could win. He even won the popular vote, which he didn't do back in 2016. He had been called Hitler by people like Barack Obama and others, and other very derogatory terms by his adversaries. He was hated, and of course, he's a convicted felon with a none too pretty past record of behaviour in the moral arena. So here is a man that's base. We can say he's base, but God uses base men for his purpose. And he's going to use this man, I believe. So none of that affected an electorate sick of struggling with the cares of everyday life, the cost of living pressures, the illegal immigrants pouring into the country, the rampant wokeism, where you had young people, young girls complaining that they were competing in their universities against males who had converted to females. He had a lot of young people supporting him for reasons like that. And the crime and the violence, which of course so much part of American life. So this outcome demonstrates the truth of Daniel 4:17. God always gets who he wants. And because we know that the powers that be are of God, he wanted Donald Trump. The answer, of course, the answer is, why did he want Donald Trump? And the answer to that is, well, because he probably will fulfill some Bible prophecies. See what we're going to consider here tonight. The huge impact that Donald Trump's election will have on fulfilling Bible prophecy. The impact of Trump's win on the war in Ukraine and its implications for Europe. His influence on Israel in its war with Hamas and what might come from it. And we've already seen, of course, some developments there as of today. The pushback on woke in the US election. The impact of Trump's trade policies on the world economy. The likelihood that Trump's new golden era will end in the time of trouble such as never was. A bit more about that later. So there are a few things that we're going to try and address tonight. Now, we've just read from Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 1 to 13, and it's very important to lay the foundation for what we're going to say a little later on, because these are the things that we're looking to have fulfilled. These are the clear signs that we're near the end, that our Lord Jesus Christ will soon appear in the earth again, and that after that, the judgments of God will sweep away the wickedness of this world and the kingdom of God will be established. So what does Ezekiel 38 require? Well, we read in verse 2 that it requires that a dictator dominates the Eurasian continent. And we'll come back to that in a moment when we come to deal with the matter of Ukraine. It requires in verses 5 and 6 that the territory east and north of Israel be under Gogian control. Gog is the title of a dictator, a powerful dictator ruling over the entire Eurasian continent. It requires in verse 6 that a dependent Europe falls under Gog's political control. We want to demonstrate tonight how Donald Trump is going to affect that outcome. It requires in verse 8 that the West Bank be part of Israel proper at the time of Armageddon. It requires in verses 8 to 11 that Israel be at peace both internally and with its near neighbours, to the point that they take their guard down again and get caught like they got caught in 1973 and on the 7th of October 2023. It also requires in verse 12 that Israel be very prosperous and envied by many other nations. And finally, in verse 13, it requires that Yemen, Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states will be the first to object to the Gogian invasion from the north. And following them, Britain and the so-called Young Lions, the countries that have a British form of government, Australia, Canada, New Zealand and India, will follow suit. So that's the requirements of the first 13 verses of Ezekiel chapter 38. And we're going to push on from there and see how Trump's election might affect some of those things. Now, there's going to be a contrast, it's anticipated, between the first and second terms of Trump. With the value of hindsight, he now acknowledges that mistakes were made in his first term as president. Some wrong choices for members of his cabinet, for example. His advisers and government appointees saw a measure of gridlock, even had Republicans who were actually working against him. Which is why you've seen some very strange nominations for very important positions by Trump. He recognises that he made some mistakes and now he's picking some people who he knows are rusted on to his policies and they will pursue them. He's 78 years of age. He cannot stand again. His party controls every level of government. They control the Congress, the House. They control the Senate. They control the Supreme Court. He's got an open check. He can do basically what he wants, unless, of course, he gets some opposition from his own party. This is the last chance to impact the future of America, and he's determined to do so. And his nominations, I said, reveal that. This man, like most rulers, wants to leave a legacy. Not like that which Biden has left. He wants to leave a very different legacy. He wants to go down in history as the man who made America great again. Well, the Bible says that's not going to happen. He's probably going to preside over a massive depression. And we'll go into that a little bit later. So here are some possible outcomes from Trump being president. The imposition of peace on the Middle East, including the resolution of the Palestinian question,
The extension of the Abraham Accord to include Saudi Arabia and other nations. The isolation of America from its traditional allies through the America First policy. The triggering of the looming depression, and the world knows it's coming, by a trade war through huge trade tariffs, particularly, of course, on China. And the withdrawal of support from Ukraine, forcing a capitulation to Russia. Initially, of course, ceding captured territory, but ultimately, as we're going to see from Scripture, returning to complete Russian rule. Some more outcomes. Withdrawing financial support from NATO, which he threatened to do in his last term, by the way, resulting in its dissolution. The end of NATO will see some European nations seeking an alliance with Russia. More about that later. Impetus given to the rapid rise of far-right political parties in Europe who have declared policies to align with Russia. That will result in the dissolution of the European Union in its present form. If Trump's policies trigger a depression, 10 nations to the south of the River Rhine and the River Danube will emerge to fulfill Daniel chapter 7, verse 7 and verse 11. So there we've got what is in front of us tonight. That's obvious. I'm not going to be able to spend too much time on any one of those, but I want to try and nail down some very interesting things that may well result from the election of Donald Trump. And you'll see when we get there why we can say that. Now, turning to the war in Ukraine. Most of you will have Ezekiel 38 open in front of you. I want you to have a look at verse 2 of Ezekiel 38. Here are two literal translations of verse 2 of this chapter. Rotherham, very literal. Son of man, set thy face against Gog. As I said, Gog is the title of a dictator. The word means, the name or the title means, the one at the top. This is one who has the vertical of power, which, by the way, Vladimir Putin has created in Russia. Just like the Tsarist regime where one man ruled, his word was law. If you don't obey it, then you're either dead or you're flicked somewhere else. That's what that term Gog means. And it says in these literal translations that this Gog, this dictator, is of the land of Magog. I am of the land of Australia, which means that that is the centre where I live. So Gog is of the land of Magog. He's prince of Rosh, Meshech and Tubal. Now you'll notice that the Amplified Bible is almost identical. So we can rely upon that translation. This is what that verse meant to say. So what have we got here? Well, we've got this. You can see in the yellow the names that we've just been reading about in that verse. You have, of course, Rosh, right in the middle. That's the most ancient form of the name Russia. You've got to the northeast of that, Meshech and Tubal. You've got Magog over there to the west of Rosh. You've got Tagama, a name that we read in Ezekiel 38, to the south. And, of course, other nations. So what about Magog? If Gog is of the land of Magog, where is that? Well, you see this map. And the red line around the nations who were embraced by it. This is what historians say was the ancient Magog. And the largest country within Magog is actually Ukraine. And to the north of that, you've got Belarus, and you can see the connection with Rus or Rosh. And, of course, that red line also goes into portion of Russia, including the Kursk region, which is in the news lately. Over on the western side, you've got Germany. So Germany is embraced in that, but what we have here is clearly a reference to the heartland of the original kingdom of the Rus, or the Rosh. So where was that kingdom? Well, the yellow shows you where the kingdom of the Kievan Rus was. You can see it goes right up into what we would call Russia today. It includes Ukraine and Belarus. That was their original kingdom. And of course, the most important emperor of the kingdom of the Rus was a man called Vladimir the First, and he established the historical capital of the Kingdom of the Rus in a place that is known today as Kiev, the capital of the Ukraine. And that was from 879 AD through to 1240 AD. It was the capital of the Kingdom of the Rus. And the ruler, the most important ruler of that era, was Vladimir the First. Well, there's another Vladimir around who's attacked Ukraine. And he wants to go down as Vladimir the Second. If you have read his very long essay from the 12th of July 2021, you will know why they invaded Ukraine on the 24th of February 2022. I suggest you look it up. There's no question as the aim of Vladimir Putin. He is going to take over in due time this kingdom. Now, of course, we would have people say, well, he's having a bit of a struggle at the moment, isn't he? Well, yes. Lost a lot of men. Not that he worries about that. Lost a lot of equipment. Yes. But the day will come when no longer will Ukraine receive the support that they are now receiving. I'm going to show you why they won't be receiving that support financially and in military weapons. So what's the immediate impact of Trump's election to the presidency? Well, President Zelensky of the Ukraine really understands it. He was one of the first to congratulate Donald Trump, knowing that he now holds the key to Ukraine's future. He remembers things like this. The BBC report about Trump's attitude towards NATO, expressed in the campaign in February 2024. And this is what Trump said at a rally in South Carolina. Trump suggested that he would encourage aggressors, for example Russia, to do whatever, excuse the language, the hell they want with NATO countries that fail to pay their dues. So in his first term, he threatened NATO countries that if you don't cough up what you are responsible to deliver to keep this organisation going, then America is leaving it. He didn't follow through on that, did he? But I want to show you that he intends to follow through on this presidency because he's appointed a man who is his vice president. And many of you will know a little bit about J.D. Vance. This was a headline in the Daily Mail for the 16th of July 2024. Now, if you think Trump speaks unusually, listen to this. Trump sends a message to Europe with Vice President selection J.D. Vance, who has declared NATO a tax on Americans and said the United Kingdom is now an Islamist country with nukes under Labour. And this is one of their close allies, all right? Britain's one of their close allies. And that's the kind of language you're hearing from tomorrow, the Vice President of America. So if someone shoots Trump, and they tried twice, if someone gets him finally, guess who's going to be the president of America? J.D. Vance. He's more Trump than Trump. Trump's all over the shop. He does, you know, he says this thing one day and this is the next. You don't know where he stands. Not with J.D. Vance. He knows where he's going. And this man, I believe, has been put there by God. There is no power but of God. J.D. Vance is there for a reason. And if you said at the beginning of 2024 that he would be the nominee for vice president, they would take you to a mental asylum. Nobody thought that. You know why? Because he used to say very nasty things about Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's got a good memory. Very nasty things about him. And he ends up being the vice president to Donald Trump. You work that one out. So here we've got the hand of God at work, I believe. Moreover, he is an outspoken supporter of Trump's America First policy. He's even stronger than Trump on that. A policy to put an immediate stop to foreign wars so as to ease the financial burden on the US budget. So what is the current situation in Ukraine? If you believe some of the stuff you see on YouTube, you'd think that Russia's going to go down the gurgler tomorrow. Not so. The war is not going well for Ukraine. Russian forces in the east are making steady progress as Ukrainian defences were thinned out for the Kursk campaign. While successful in Kursk, at least in measure, Ukraine now faces 11,000 North Korean troops there. Ukraine has been steadily drained of fighting men, of armaments, and of ammunition, and they are desperate for the Western world to continue supplying them. That may change as of tomorrow. Vital infrastructure in Ukraine is being progressively destroyed by persistent Russian attacks from the air. So what are Trump's promises on Ukraine? Well, he boasted during the campaign that he would end the war quickly. I mean, he made nonsense statements like in 24 hours. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's typical Trump. Nonsense. It won't happen in 24 hours, but tells you something about his intentions. Zelensky responded by a daring military campaign into Russia itself, into Kursk, because, you see, he wanted some cards that he could trade. He wanted to trade Kursk for the Crimea, for example. And on Trump's election, Zelensky proposed that swap between Kursk and Crimea. There is no chance that Russia will give up the Crimea. You can forget that. Nor retreat in the Donbass, in the east of the Ukraine. And failure to reach an agreement and a likely depression that will follow will end US support for Ukraine. They will have no option but to fall back under Russian control. And you know why we know that's going to happen? Because the Bible says it's going to happen. Gog, the great dictator in the north, who's going to lead an invasion of the land of Israel, as described in this chapter, is of the land of Magog. That's his origin, so to speak. That's where the kingdom of the Rus originally was. And Vladimir Putin has made it quite clear that he wants to re-establish the kingdom of the Rus. Read his article, 12th of July, 2021. Now, turning to the rise, and this is related to what we've just been saying, because what happens in Ukraine is going to have a major effect on the European nations to the west. Let's turn to the rise of far-right political parties in Europe. And the reasons for that are many. The cost of living crisis has impacted every nation on the planet. Germany is in serious financial trouble and political strife. In fact, Germany's financial state right now is worse than Greece's was 7 or 8 years ago. Greece had 160% debt ratio to GDP. Germany's worse. Why? How did that happen? Well, because you see, ships, probably under the guidance of Russia, we don't know, but ships dragged their anchors through the Baltic Sea and they ripped up not just oil and gas lines, they ripped up internet lines. And that, of course, has meant that not only do they not get as much fuel from Russia, but what they do get is twice the price that they used to pay. So when they go to manufacture a Mercedes-Benz, it costs a whole lot more, which means you can't export as much. So they are in serious trouble. And then they've got a swarm of immigrants coming from the south, from Syria and all other places, through the Mediterranean into Germany and other countries, and they simply can't handle that. And that's why the far-right AfD party is now polling a close second to the Chancellor's party in Germany. So who is this AfD party? Well, they're not unlike the parties that are now in control of other European nations. Austria, Hungary, the Netherlands or Holland, and Italy have right-wing governments who seek closer ties with Russia. And poverty is the real motivator. So here's the German far-right party, the AfD. This is their policy, delivered on the 14th of July 2024. And the article said this: the far-right alternative for Germany, AfD, is set to make the controlled dissolution of the European Union one of its key targets for the upcoming European elections. They were held in the middle of 2024. with its leader Tino Chrupalla calling Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban one of his main allies. And Viktor Orban, who's part of NATO, part of the European Union, he is dead against the war in Ukraine. He says that we shouldn't be supplying all this money and equipment to the Ukraine. Doesn't help when you're the chairman for a time of the European Union, which is what he is at the moment. That doesn't help, does it? In their European Union election manifesto proposal, which is due to be ratified during the party conference on the 29th of July 2024, the AfD calls for a controlled dissolution of the overbearing European Union. This is what he said, their leader. We're demanding a reset for Europe so that we can use the potential of nation states and rebuild the bridge to the east. You've got one guess as to what he means by that. What do you reckon he means by that? To build the bridge to the east. Well, let's travel east from Germany. Where do you go? Well, you go to Russia. And that's what he means. To rebuild the relationship with Russia. This is why we can say with absolute confidence from Ezekiel 38 verses 5 and 6 that Europe will not need to be conquered by military action by Russia. They will simply fall into their grasp like a ripened fruit. That's what's happening already. So, what about France to the south of Germany? These are the two major countries now in the European Union, Germany and France, now that Britain is gone in fulfilment of Bible prophecy. Macron made a fatal mistake. He made a very fatal mistake by calling an early election to head off a parliamentary election in France to head off the sharp rise in the European elections of Marine Le Pen's far-right party. It has backfired on him as the fragile coalition that he had to set up between centre and left parties has crumbled over budget matters. A no-confidence motion supported by the left and the right was won by them 331 to 577 in the French Parliament, and it saw the fall of the Prime Minister at the time, Michel Barnier. The Parliament in France is in chaos. They now have a temporary Prime Minister trying to patch together some kinds of coalitions that they can actually govern. That nation is in serious trouble. And there are calls for Macron, who was elected in 2017 and re-elected in 2022 for five-year terms. There are calls already for him to step down, to get out of the way. So France is in big trouble. So what do you reckon might emerge in France? This party. France has a major far-right Eurosceptic and openly pro-Russian party that receives funding from the Kremlin. Now, this is going back to 2016. It was an embarrassment at the time for Marine Le Pen, the daughter of a man who led the far-right extreme party, and he's just died a little while ago. As the leader of the National Front, which was his party, she advocates leaving the Eurozone, which means getting out of the European Union, withdrawal from NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the abolition of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, limits on immigration and forging, notice the green on the screen, forging what she calls a privileged partnership with Russia, just like the AfD party in Germany. You're getting a bit of a feel for where things are heading in Europe? Yeah. So what happens then if Trump withdraws support for Ukraine? Well, the European nations can't continue to provide that support because they're already bust. They're gone. Ukraine will fall into the hands of Russia. And in the elections that are coming up, you know where the AfD sits in the scheme of things in Germany? Second to the Chancellor's party. And they are winning huge votes, numbers of votes in the regional elections in Germany. So they're coming, they're coming. What happens if you have some sort of depression or financial collapse? We know what happens. The right-wing parties will come to power in Europe. Now, she's had a few problems herself, this woman. She's on trial at the moment for apparently or allegedly embezzling European Union funds. It doesn't matter about whether she's the leader or not. Her party will be probably in power in due time in France. Now, why is this important to Bible prophecy? Well, because you see, the European Union as we know it doesn't fulfill Bible prophecy. It has 28 nations in it. It has to have 10. And those 10 have to be in the territory of the former Roman Empire. And Daniel chapter 7 will tell you that. I haven't got time tonight to take you there. But if you go to Daniel 7, verse 7, and then read on down to verse 11, this is what you'll read. That at the time of the end, there has to be a worldwide empire, so to speak, that covers the territories of the ancient four major empires of Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, because they are going to be overcome. In the case of the Roman, destroyed. That's what verse 11, you can't destroy something that's not there. So this is what has to happen. You see the red line around those nations, the southern European nations? There's going to be 10 in there. And they'll be there and they'll have support from the papacy. And the Pope will regain a lot of clout and influence in Europe because of the depression that's coming. And people return to religion when there is poverty. Russia proves that. Because in the 1990s, when Russia went through terrible troubles, people went back to religion in their droves. That's what they do when you've got nothing. You turn to religion. That's what's going to happen again. Now, we could say a lot more about that, of course. Hope that that might just pique your interest a little to pursue that and to follow that up. Because I want to turn to the Middle East. Trump and the Middle East. One of the boasts of Trump during the election campaign was that he would bring peace to both the Middle East and to Ukraine in a very short space of time. It is reported he had a conversation with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, and told him to end the wars with Hamas and Hezbollah by the 20th of January 2025. He doesn't want wars being fought when he's being inaugurated. He wants to fulfill a promise, bring peace to the Middle East. Well, temporarily that might be the case. It is reported that Netanyahu agreed, and what we've seen in the last few days would suggest that. Trump also said he would bring Saudi Arabia into the Abraham Accord. This is not possible, as we're going to see, it's not possible without a Palestinian state. Ah, now we come to two very important matters. Will there be a Palestinian state? And where will it be? Well, I want you to come with me to Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 8. This is what it says. After many days, thou. Now, the thou here is the Gog of verse 2, the dictator of that northern confederacy of powers who will come down and invade the Middle East, and particularly Israel and Egypt. Thou shalt be visited. In other words, God will be involved. In the latter years, if you cast your eye across to verse 16, you'll find that there's reference to the latter days. What time period are we in? Well, we're in the latter days now. How would you prove that? Just read on. Because when you read in verse 8, it says this. Thou shalt come against the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many peoples against the mountains of Israel. Yes. So there's a nation here called Israel. Do you know that from 722 BC, which is a long time ago, right down to 1948, there was no nation on the planet called Israel. But there is now. So we're in the latter days. We know the time period. And what do we read about that nation? That it's got mountains. Well, where are these mountains? Ezekiel 38 verse 8 requires that the West Bank will be part of Israel proper when Gog enters the land. He comes down upon the mountains of Israel. And as you can see from that yellow oval shape, which is around the area, got a red line around it, that's the so-called West Bank, 90% of the hills and the mountains in the central massif of the land are in the West Bank. And Netanyahu, who wasn't once inclined towards annexation of the West Bank back in 2017, now supports that. And in fact, both political parties in Israel support the annexation of the West Bank. And they're actually right now, as I sit here, undertaking the necessary administrative tasks to achieve it. I'm going to show you that. Now, there's another little passage in Ezekiel 38 that needs to be noted. It's at the end of verse 12. Because we read of these people brought back from captivity into the land that's now called Israel. They're very prosperous. They're envied by other peoples. And it tells us where they live. It says at the end of verse 12 that they dwell in the midst of the land. That word midst there is tabur in the Hebrew. And that word means, well, the midst, the center, the navel. So it could be rendered the navel. Now, I know where my navel is. It's in the center of my body. If you look at the land of Israel, which we know is projected in the scriptures as like a body, because it's got Mount Hermon, the head, down the bottom in the Negev, it's got two mountain ranges like the legs, it's got the Carmel range, which is like an arm, underneath that you've got ribs. Yes, it's like a land. Where are you going to put the navel? I know where I'd put it. Right where they say West Bank. That's the second proof that we're dealing with this particular section of the land of Israel. And Isaiah 10 chimes in, using the invasion by the Assyrians in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, it tells us that what they did is the pattern for what Gog will do. The latter-day Assyrian called that in Micah chapter 5 and verse 5. Okay, so we know. Can you see some red dots on that map? Can you see the green names in the text, Isaiah 10, 28 to 32? Well, those green names are represented in the red dots. You see, the Assyrian of old and of the future will take the same path into the land. Exactly the same path. The mountains of Israel. And Israel is preparing for annexation of the West Bank. They don't call it the West Bank, by the way. They call it Judea and Samaria. It was called the West Bank because it belonged to Jordan once, and Jordan has a Jordan River down the middle. They have an East Bank and they have a West Bank. The Jews don't call it that. Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, lays the groundwork for West Bank annexation. Here's an article from the 11th of November 2024. He said the year 2025 will be the year of sovereignty for Judea and Samaria. He said Trump's victory also brings with it an important opportunity for the state of Israel. We were a step away from applying sovereignty to the settlements in Judea and Samaria, and now is the time to do it. He went on to say this: today there is a broad consensus in the coalition and in the opposition, because both major parties in Israel have got the same policy, that the establishment of a Palestinian state would endanger the existence of the state of Israel. 2025 will be the year of sovereignty in Judea and Samaria. I instructed the Director of Settlements in the Defence Ministry and the Civil Administration to begin professional and comprehensive work to prepare for applying our sovereignty, he said. It's already underway. It may well happen in 2025. So what does prophecy say about a two-state solution? If the Palestinian state won't be in the West Bank, because the West Bank will be part of Israel proper, where might we expect to find a Palestinian state? Well, in actual fact, they still want one. 157 nations on the 3rd of December last year voted to cling to the policy of a Palestinian state, a two-state solution. And, of course, they think they're going to get their way. Well, they probably will, but it won't be in the West Bank. So where will it be? I want you to come with me to these three references. Now, I've got to be quick with this, but I'm going to do my best to show you that we're dealing with the latter days here in these three contexts. In Joel chapter 3, Joel's a bit further on in your Bibles, Joel chapter 3, we have a chapter that deals with Armageddon. You can read it for yourself. Clear. It's very much like Zechariah 14. It's about the Gogite invasion from the north coming into the land. It's clear that it's the latter days because the end result is the establishment of the kingdom of God on earth. So look at verse 4. This is what it says. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre and Sidon? I think that's where the Hezbollah hang out, don't they? Tyre and Zidon. And all the coasts of Palestine. And that's all I want. That's all I need. Does Palestine, if there's a state in the West Bank, does it have a coastline? No. The closest that the West Bank section in the Green Line gets to the Mediterranean is 9 miles, whatever that might be in kilometres. All right, that's the closest it gets. It doesn't have a coastline. So there is an entity, at the time of Armageddon, there's an entity in the Middle East called Palestine. And it's got a coastline. Come to the next reference, Zephaniah chapter 2, a bit further on in our Bibles. So what does Zephaniah say about this? Zephaniah chapter 2. Now again, it's very important to establish the time period. What are we dealing with here? Is it our time? Well, I want to show you verse 11 first up before we go back to verse 4. Have a look at Zephaniah chapter 2 verse 11. It says this. The Lord will be terrible unto them. Well, who's the them? Well, the them are those nations mentioned in earlier verses. In verse 8, for example, you've got Moab and Ammon. So he's going to bring judgment upon nations who have mistreated his people Israel. But read on in verse 11. For he will famish all the gods of the earth. Now, how do you famish the fictitious false gods of the earth? Well, you take away their worshippers. You remove from them those who are their devotees, who worship them. So they are starved of people worshipping them. And what's the outcome of this famishing of these false gods of the earth? Well, look at the end of verse 11. And men shall worship him. Well, who's the him? Well, it's the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Israel, at the beginning of the verse. They shall worship him, every man, every one from his place, which means in their own countries, in their own lands, and even all the isles of the heathen, all the nations. Yeah, just like Australia. It's an island. It's a big one, but it's an island. So even in Australia, the most irreligious country on the planet, people will be worshipping the God of Israel. Sorry if there's any Australians here. But it's true. You know how many people have any form of religion in Australia? In the last census, 27% will acknowledge any religion. And most of them are in the new religion. You know what that is? Witchcraft. That's our country. But the time's going to come when every surviving person on the planet will worship the God of Israel. You got your context right? Go back to verse 4. Zephaniah 2 verse 4. For Gaza shall be first. Oh, that's interesting. That Gaza should be first cab off the rank. For Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ashkelon a desolation, and they shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron, which means to root up, shall be rooted up. Then read the next verse. Verse 5. Woe unto the inhabitants of the sea coast. So we know that this entity has a coastline. The nation, so they're a nation, all right? The nation of the Kerethites. You know who Kerethites were? Philistines. You know how the name Palestine came into existence? The Romans gave it as a derogatory name for the remaining Jews after the rebellion of Bar Kokhba in AD 135. They hated the Jews that remained because they kept on rebelling. So they called them Philistines. Called Jews Philistines. And in Roman, in the Latin tongue, you know how that was? Palestine. So the name Palestine comes from Philistine. So we've got a nation here that's named after the Philistines. Palestine. Let's just read on, verse 5. The word of Yahweh, he says, is against you, O Canaan. And I'm going to put a word in here because this is what it should read. Canaan of the land of the Philistines. Yeah, I think we can confidently say that this is a prophecy that's going to be fulfilled very shortly. There will be a Palestinian state, but it won't be in the West Bank. It will not have East Jerusalem as its capital. It will be in the Gaza Strip. And I'll show you that that's exactly what is being planned. Ezekiel 25 is our third reference. Come to Ezekiel 25. Now again, I'd like to spend a bit of time in the surrounds to show you the time period. But you can do that from verse 17, the last verse of the chapter. It says this, "And I will execute great vengeance upon them," and we'll find out who the them are in a minute, "with furious rebukes, and they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I shall lay my vengeance upon them." When do you think that might be? When do you think that's going to happen? Well, obviously, it's Armageddon and the judgments that are coming. Yeah. And they will know God. People don't know the God of Israel today. They will know him then when his judgments have been played out upon them. So we know the context. It's the latter days. It's about the establishment of the kingdom. Step back to verse 15. This is what verse 15 says. "Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, because the Philistines..." Oh, hang on. Philistines? Could I have the liberty to offer another alternative to Philistines? How about we put Palestinians in there? Because that's where that name came from. "Because the Palestinians have dealt by revenge and have taken vengeance with a despiteful heart to destroy it," that is Israel, "for the old hatred." If you had wanted to make a summary of what happened on the 7th of October, 2023, I don't think you could do any better than that. There's the old hatred. There's the taking of vengeance. The cruelty that was shown on that day and since is described there. And the reasons for it are described there. So what's going to happen next? Look at verse 16. "Therefore, thus saith Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will stretch out mine hand upon the Philistines," could I include Palestinians, "and I will cut off the Kerethims." So where are you going to cut them off from? Well, read on. It says, "I will destroy the remnant of the sea coast." The three references that we've looked at have all got a sea coast. And each of those contexts concerns the latter days and events involving the redemption of Israel. Each presages the existence of a nation, which means they're in the United Nations, a nation with a name associated with the Philistines, there's no doubt. But what about the role of the important players in the scheme of things? The role of Saudi Arabia is critical. Saudi Arabia is the Dedan of Ezekiel 38:13. It will be, along with the UAE and Oman and Yemen, the Sheba of Ezekiel 38:13, an ally of Israel at the time of Armageddon. The price for this alliance is settlement of the Palestinian issue. I'm going to show you an article that appeared in the Newsweek online magazine on the 24th of November last year. It makes that position very clear. And we know from Joel 3 that these nations seem to have a role in matters concerning the Palestinians from Joel chapter 3 verses 4 to 8. The Sabaeans are mentioned there, and Sabaeans are, of course, Sheba from Yemen. This is the article from Newsweek. As I said, this was their heading. Saudi Arabia has its own deal of the century. You'll notice that I've got that in inverted commas. That's because that's the title of the book that Trump wrote, right? He wrote a book of that title. So they've got their own deal of the century for Trump. And the article outlines the situation awaiting Trump when he takes office. Saudi Arabia is wedded to a two-state solution, going back to 2002, and will not compromise on it because it's the leader of the Arab world, particularly the Sunni Arab world. It can't make a decision that would put them offside. So recently, Iran, which is Shiite, and Saudi Arabia, which is Sunni, and they don't like each other, temporarily repaired their relationship through China's intervention. And Saudi Arabia is tinkering with the idea of joining the BRICS movement led by China and Russia. That sends heart palpitations through the West. They don't want that to happen. They don't want Saudi Arabia to become a partner in the BRICS organisation. So what about this nation, Saudi Arabia? Well, here is an inside view of their position. Abdullah bin Farah al-Shayah, a retired brigadier general who previously served as a Saudi military attaché in Washington, commented this way. "This is a complex and thorny issue that was at the same time one of the most important pending issues of the Middle East, one in which Saudi Arabia was urgently looking for peaceful solutions as long," notice this, "as long as they serve and enhance its interests, but not at the expense of the Palestinian cause. So if they want Saudi Arabia in the Abraham Accord, there's only one way to get it. There's got to be a Palestinian state. But we know it's not going to be in the West Bank, which is what makes this article very, very important. This goes right back to the 16th of December 2017. That's a little while ago. It's nearly 8 years ago. It said this. This is from Debka. They got behind the news and they said this. The old Saudi Arab League peace plan of 2003 is a dead letter. Riyadh, which is the capital of Saudi Arabia, has dropped its demand that Israel accept a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. Since the original Saudi peace proposal, which the prince, and they're referring here when they say MBS to Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia who rules the country, since he called Plan A dead, it's necessary to move forward to Plan B. So what's Plan B? Well, Plan B is essentially as follows. The state of Palestine would be established in the Gaza Strip, plus large tracts of territory to be annexed from northern Sinai. Egypt has agreed to this outline. This is nearly 8 years ago. It's already there under the table. And Bible prophecy says it's going to happen. There will not be a Palestinian state in the West Bank, but there will be one in the Gaza Strip. There's probably some additional territory granted by Egypt, and they don't particularly want the Sinai region anyway. So, let's finally then turn, and we have to be quick on this, let's turn to the time of trouble that Donald Trump may have a hand in precipitating. He thinks it's going to be a golden age for America. It might be a total disaster and catastrophe for the entire globe. Because we read in Daniel chapter 12 and verses 1 and 2 these words. We know the time period. It's the time of the end. And at that time shall Michael stand up. That's the title of our Lord Jesus Christ. The great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. And that's saying something. And at that time, so it's a concomitant event. Thy people shall be delivered. Now we know who they are because it tells us who they are. Everyone that should be found written in the book. And we know what book that is. It's called the Book of Life. And your name goes in there when you make a covenant relationship with God by baptism. It goes in that book. And it stays there providing you walk in the right way. Goes on to talk about the resurrection of the dead, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. So we're looking at a time where there are concomitant events. There will be the resurrection of the dead, and immediately after that, the collapse of the world's economy and all that the trusts in. And there will be a time on this planet like they have never seen before in history. When's that? Now this chart, of course, I'm not going to explain that. Just look at the left-hand side of the chart. 10 years there will be between the return of Christ and Armageddon, the battle we've been talking about. That is the period of the time of trouble such as never was. And that financial collapse is coming. US debt to the rest of the world is said to be heading towards $35 trillion. That's not taking into account the unfunded liabilities of the government, which account to about $160 trillion. They can't ever pay that back. China's population is imploding. Its construction sector has collapsed. And while its manufacturing continues, of course, it's not like it used to be. It faces decreased demand and huge Trump tariffs. Almost every European country is in deep financial crisis led by Germany and France. Japan is in crisis, and something unusual, curious is happening in Japan. They don't have high interest rates like Australia and probably Canada does. Our interest rates are between 4 and 5% set by the Reserve Bank. In Japan, they've been zero for a decade, almost a decade. Zero, which means you can borrow money very cheaply from the banks at 1 or 2%. This is what happened in the 1920s when Americans borrowed cheap money. And they put it into shares, and the stock market kept going up and up and up until finally, of course, it went over the edge. That's happening in Japan today. The same thing that happened in 1929. This is probably the best sign that we're very close to the return of Christ. Because when this crash comes, it's going to be enormous. Just look it up. Look it up for yourself. Look at people who have predicted crashes in the past. See what they're saying. They know the cycles are happening again. Look it up and you'll know it's coming. We know. We know from the interpretation of time periods that we're also there. And the character of the seasons that the return of Christ is near. And the world knows that it's running out of time to stop global warming, its effects. They know. The scientists are saying that if you don't get your act together, the globe will be uninhabitable somewhere between 2035 and 2050. So the world knows it's coming. And we need to know it's coming. Financial pundits are predicting a huge crash. Some say a Great Depression. And the continuing cost of living crisis around the globe is perhaps our best sign. You know why? Because Christ's teachings about the time when he would come would be that the world would be in a time of general prosperity. That doesn't mean that every person on the planet is prosperous. But generally, around the globe, there has been prosperity. That's why it's so important to us. There will be prosperity in the world when Christ comes. Because he says in Luke 17, 26 to 30, that it'll be like the days of Noah and Lot. What were they doing? Well, they're eating and drinking. You know, the restaurant, pub-type drinking. They're marrying and being given in marriage, jumping into one marriage and out of that into another one. Buying and selling, building and planting. They're doing all those things, and then all their prosperity collapsed in a day. After Noah and his family were put in the ark. After Lot and his family were taken out of Sodom. Those who are responsible to divine judgment are going to the judgment seat of Christ at Mount Sinai, by the way, and that can be proven, before the collapse comes. And the world knows it's creeping up on us. The pattern was set for the end. In Luke 17, 26 to 30, Christ particularly chooses these two eras to represent what we will go through. We will go through that same process of living in a time of prosperity. He warns to remember Lot's wife. That would be ridiculous, wouldn't it, if we were living in poverty and misery? Why would you say that? We will be living in a time of prosperity when he comes again. And he's not too far away. It might seem a long time to those who have been waiting for most of their lifetime. But wait for it. Because it will surely come, and it will not tarry.